You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL. Hey guys, Steve Palazzolo here. As you know, we're in the heart of one of the greatest sports events on the calendar. You guessed it, March Madness. And the best place to stay on top of all the NCAA tournament coverage, that's CBS Sports HQ. What is CBS Sports HQ? It's the free 24-hour sports network that's built for fans just like you and me. I watch it every day, and here's why. You don't get any of the hot takes, fake debates, or politics like other sports networks. Just the stuff that matters, like nonstop highlights, news and analysis, no matter when I tune in. And if you enjoy fantasy or placing some bets like I've been known to do, their experts are always dishing out picks to help me win. So check out CBS Sports HQ. It's always on and always free. No need to pay a subscription fee or have an expensive cable package. Just download the CBS Sports app on your phone, Fire TV, Roku, or Apple TV to start watching today. 60 seconds. That's exactly how long this commercial lasts. You know what else you can do in about a minute? Get an offer for your car from TrueCar. That's right. In the amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, pet your dog, do a few sit-ups, or just listen to my voice, you can get a true cash offer. Best of all, you can do it from your smartphone or at home. Just go to TrueCar and simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Answer a few questions and you'll get an accurate true cash offer from a local TrueCar certified dealer. It's that easy. After that, you can bring your car in and they'll check it out with you together. You can ask questions and get the answers you need so there's no surprises. Then simply leave with your check or trade in your car for a new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo here with Mike Renner, fresh from spring break. He is back. Welcome back, Mike.
Good to be back. My batteries are recharged. I'm ready to rock all through draft season.
How was spring break?
It was fun. I went down to Florida. Got a little tan. If you were watching the video, you can see.
Did you go to like the MTV parties and all that
stuff?
No,
I didn't do anything that cool. I went to Disney World.
Did you?
Yeah, it was fun.
Really? I'll have to do a whole podcast about that someday. Yeah, for sure. So it's great.
Yeah.
Everything's going well?
Everything's going well. Good to be back talking draft. So close to finalizing our draft board. Can't wait.
We're very close. Yeah, we have many, many names. There's still a ton to still watch and resort, but that's just where we are as we dive into the data, rewatch these guys. Let's get into some of the big news from this week. And you know, somebody requested on Twitter, I think it was a good idea, just discussing the second and third round and things that could happen there. We'll talk about some of our favorite fits potentially in the second, third round, some of the beyond the first round stuff. We'll fix that table that you're messing up here. Let's start with the news about Josh Rosen, though, because I'm not a news-breaking type of guy, but like I had this on January 10th. Everybody wants to get credit. You know, before Schefter, go check the timestamps. Josh Rosen to the Giants, had it on January 10th. I was first on Twitter. This is important. Important stuff. So it sounds like Arizona's going to be getting Kyler Murray.
You bragged to your friends about being first on Twitter.
Yeah, Rick Riley style. That was what he went like hashtag first on Twitter back in the day. It's a joke, Mike. I think it sounds like it's happening. I think it's the right move.
I think they are going to draft Kyler Murray when it's all said and done. I think there's enough smoke that I believe that that's where they're going to end up. And at that point, Josh Rosen's trade value will only be going downhill. He's only going to go downhill from here.
But is that true, though?
So if Kyler Murray steps in from day one and is your starter, it's only going to go downhill from here.
I don't know if that's truly the case because of how
important it is to have a quarterback on the rookie contract.
Okay, so by the day, Rosen's contract is shrinking, therefore less value. Okay, that part is fine. I do think the idea of having Kyler Murray in camp and Josh Rosen in camp isn't that big of a deal. We've seen the Sam Bradford thing happen before the season where he got flipped for a first-round pick from the Eagles to the Vikings. I mean, crazier stuff has happened. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to go into the season with Rosen. But I want to discuss Rosen's trade value here. Okay. Last year, he goes number 10 overall. Some people had him number one on their QB draft board. How much does one not great season in Arizona in one of the worst situations in the NFL, if not the worst, how much does that affect his value? I say not so much. I can't believe that the NFL is talking about a potential third round pick for him at this point.
I think it still impacts you pretty highly in my mind. If you're going into, say you're the Cardinals last season, you're going into that draft and I tell you the quarterback you're going to draft is going to suck as a rookie. He's going to be very bad. And there's no sugarcoating it. Josh Rosen was very bad. He was one of the lowest grade quarterbacks in the NFL as a rookie, not a lot of even highly graded games throughout his season. I tell you that they're probably not drafting him at 10. You're saying, if I know he's going to suck as a rookie, you're just playing the odds there. Usually guys who go on to be, you know, Hall of Famers, very good quarterbacks, at least show something as a rookie, or at least good at times as a rookie.
Pull out your rookie year tweets. Yes. Pull it out. You're looking for it. All right, because I want to discuss this. I have a theory on it, and it's one we can't completely prove yet, but we're going to prove it. I think Rosen can bounce back because, as I was tweeting the other day, players don't change. The situations change more than players, right? I don't think Rosen has changed as a player. He came in as a flawed prospect whose highs were high and lows were low. Much like an Eli Manning. You put him behind a rough offensive line, it's going to be bad. You don't give him a good set of receivers, it's going to be bad. Can he make NFL throws? Yes. Do I think some evaluators overrated Rosen because when he does it right, it looks pretty? Absolutely. Throws a nice dig route, looks the part, all that fun stuff. That part's overrated. Now, your tweet recently about the guys that have been at the lowest of the low, I thought was interesting, but I think there's an explanation, even perhaps within the PFF data.
So here, quarterbacks that rookie season graded below 60 overall. Josh Rosen, and had actual legitimate time. I think it was 225 or 250 dropbacks, something like that. Josh Rosen, CJ Beathard, Deshaun Kizer, Jared Goff, Derek Carr, Blake Bortles, EJ Manuel, Nick Foles, Brandon Whedon, Christian Ponder, Blaine Gabbert, Josh Freeman, Mark Sanchez, Matt Stafford, Trent Edwards, Matt Leinart, Bruce Gradkowski, and Vince Young. So,
friend Bruce,
if you're looking for hits out of that list, Matt Stafford.
Let me see the list. I need to see it.
Jared Goff, Derek Carr, maybe Nick Foles, but Nick Foles not even for his original franchise. Obviously for his original franchise, but went elsewhere, was not, a hit really in the sense of the word. So,
but here's how I think you could sort those guys. So it's good. I mean, not a lot of guys dug these guys out. Here's what I'm going to say. Jared Goff dug himself out of the hole. Derek Carr dug himself out, and Matthew Stafford also did. You said Nick Foles. Yeah, he's kind of hit or miss. We'll see what happens. But as far as Goff, this is where, I think the college data matters. When you go back to college, Jared Goff had an elite grade. He had some top-notch grades. We evaluated him as a first-round prospect. That, to me, trumps the bad first year. Derek Carr, we actually went and graded his senior year. He had a 90-plus PFF grade. We still we have to do more of his career. So I think that trumped his bad first season. Matthew Stafford, I don't know where he would have graded. We don't have that information. But when you compare him to, like, C.J. Beathard, was not great in college in our numbers. DeShone Kizer was not. Blake Bortles would have been, I think, okay. EJ Manuel, no way he would have been good in our numbers. I watched him. That is last year. Brandon Whedon, okay. Christian Ponder, no. Blaine Gabbert, no. Josh Freeman, maybe. Sanchez, maybe. My point is, a lot of these guys had... I think you defer back to the college guy more so than what happened that rookie season. And that's why it's like, all right, don't write off Goff, don't write off Carr, don't write off Stafford.
Yeah.
I think Rosen is on that borderline of those other guys, but a step below them. I think he still has something to offer the NFL.
But I do think, so the guys that ended up being hits from that group, Jared Goff was the number one quarterback drafted in that draft. Matt Stafford was the number one quarterback drafted in that draft. The college evaluation was surefire sort of franchise guy. The Derek Carr is probably the one outlier, but he's been up and down over the course of his career. Really only had one good season where he graded well for us, and he came from Fresno State. Simplistic offense. You can sort of see why it might have been rough for him out of the gate as a rookie. Josh Rosen played for Jim Moore at UCLA. Pro-style offense. Guy who was coaching in the NFL, then went back to college. He should have been, you know, theoretically NFL-ready from that standpoint. And then you take into the fact that five teams in the top 10 last year needed quarterbacks and passed on Josh Rosen. Five different NFL teams said Josh Rosen's not our number one guy.
Now that's fourth quarterback off the board.
Broncos passed on a QB, probably needed one. You know, other teams, Giants needed a QB, said no, not Rosen. So all these teams are saying, no, we don't think he's a franchise guy or our franchise guy. I think at that point, there's a lot of sort of red flags going off to where I'm going to take my best option, which is going with Kyler Murray and try to recoup any sort of value I can here because, like I just said earlier,
for Arizona,
it's only going to go downhill.
For Arizona, I think it's a no-brainer.
I'm not writing him off, but if I'm another NFL franchise looking at him, I'm not sure. Like, if your ceiling is Derek Carr out of this, I'm not sure that's enough for me. You know, I don't think that's not a great ceiling.
There's two ways to look at this whole thing, right? We talked about Jared Goff, Derek Carr, Matthew Stafford coming out of it. Their peaks are like top, they barely scratched the top eight quarterbacks. Goff was in the top eight at times for us, but he's very well protected by the system. Derek Carr had the 1 year where he was about eighth in the NFL for us. Stafford's had 1 or 2 years as a top 10 quarterback, despite a great skill set. So you could look at that list and say, yes, these guys became viable, pretty good NFL quarterbacks, but they never became top eight guys. And top eight is just this random arbitrary cutoff, but there's probably about eight guys that do separate themselves in the NFL at any given time. So if you're the Cardinals, the debate is Kyler Murray a potential top eight guy, whereas the percentage of Josh Rosen being one of those guys we think is
low,
really low. That's a no-brainer. My question is, if you're the Washington Redskins or the New York Giants, would you give up a mid-first-round pick for Josh Rosen? I instinctively say yes, mostly because if he does hit, the payoff is just so much greater than the risk of giving up the first rounder.
Yeah,
we have a flyover at opening day.
Oh, yeah, that's what that is.
We're either under attack or there's a flyover for Reds opening day. Of opening day here in Cincinnati.
I thought it started thunder.
Luckily, we're in this bombshell. Like, the whole office could have exploded right now and we wouldn't know. But that, I think, is what just happened right now. Some flyover.
Yeah. Damn, I wish I could have seen it. All right. I love flyovers. But let me get back to the Josh Rosen point. Saying you can evaluate based off of the rookie season. Yes, it was a terrible situation. I don't think that means throw it out the window, in my opinion. It's still something. It's still a part of his evaluation. When his evaluation wasn't even surefire coming out, when there were big red flags coming out in his game, when he was a very imperfect quarterback coming out, for him not to hit the ground running in any sort of way, shape, or form is another red flag to me, where second round, I think, is viable. I'm not going to go top of the second round, middle second round, but I'm not going to go and say, give me a first, make him my franchise guy now after what I saw from him a season ago.
All right, that's fair. Maybe I'm overrating him a little bit. I don't know. I mean, look, and here's how I looked at him coming out. Eli Manning-ish.
I just think you got to set your sights higher than he could turn into Derek Carr, you know?
I understand.
You
got
to set your sights higher than that if you're really one of these teams that needs QB.
But even when he was coming out last year, I said, okay, if you could have an Eli Manning career where in 10 years you're going to have two kind of peak seasons where you could, if everything's, you know, if you've got the right supporting cast and all that stuff, you could make a playoff run. You're going to have some inconsistency. You probably won't make the playoffs a bunch of other times. I think that's worth the first round risk. I don't know if anything's changed on that end. Josh Rosen still can make NFL throws, still struggles outside of structure, still isn't the most accurate guy in the class and the best decision maker. All that stuff hasn't changed. Nothing's changed about that other than the extra year on the contract and the fact that, and then just weighing the risk, and it's you and me weighing the risk a little bit different, mm-hmm. I think, as far as what his top end could be, because I don't think his top end has changed.
Yeah, I agree. I just don't think it's the top. I just don't think you're betting, like I said, I'd set my sights higher than what his top end could be at this point.
If you're Arizona, you're good taking a second round pick, third round pick?
Yeah, I'd take a second round for him at this point.
Okay.
Or you could just, I don't think there's anything also wrong with if they don't trade him and go into camp with both.
Here's
there's
the alternative.
Nothing, people are going to say, oh, you know, you don't want to split the locker room. I think that's BS.
Locker room stuff. Again, if your franchise quarterback cannot handle a little bit of competition
exactly.
and drama, then, you know, what are you even doing here?
You weren't going to make it anyway.
Here's my thing, though. If I'm Washington or, say, Miami, and say Miami's not on the two-year tank plan that they're hinting toward, the alternative is draft Daniel Jones. You hope Dwayne Haskins falls.
Start Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Or Drew Locke. Well, I'm saying when you're looking for your next quarterback, if it's Josh Rosen versus Dwayne Haskins versus Daniel Jones versus Drew Locke versus Will Greer, I think Rosen's the best group guy of that bunch. It's Rosen and Haskins, and then I would definitely take Rosen over.
I still think the unknown, though, has some sort of value in that Drew Locke could come to the NFL and it looks different from year one, whereas Josh Rosen, we know he came to the NFL and it was bad year one. I think that sort of unknown is still, in my mind, more valuable than
Locke.
I'm not saying I'm drafting either in the first round. I'm just saying if I have a second round pick where the Dolphins are, I'd rather have Drew Locke there. Now he's probably not gonna be there, but I'd rather have Drew Locke there than Josh Rosen.
If you put Locke in the situation that Rosen was in last year,
ugly,
that would have been even more of a disaster. All right, it's good discussion about Rosen and his value. Let's get into some of the second and third round stuff. Let's start with a little bit of love for the teams that don't have a first round pick. The Chicago Bears, New Orleans Saints, now the Cleveland Browns. So they've gotten some mock draft love during the season because they just traded their second or their first. And then the Dallas Cowboys. These are the teams, their fans are always like, look, I don't want to read your first round mock because my team's not in there. Give us some picks. Give us some players. So let's do that. Let's start with the Chicago Bears. And I heard that our colleagues on the Forecast have already started to make some Chicago Bears, Jacksonville Jaguars comparisons because of Trubisky not really being that great at this point in his career. And the rest of the roster, as we were doing our team needs at profootballfocus.com this week, we're like, man, the Bears don't really have a ton of needs. Mm-hmm. That was Jacksonville for the last couple of years. They're building this roster. You're doing a mock draft. You're like, all right, what need are we filling here with our pick? That's what fans want. And it looked pretty good. And then they were held back by the quarterback. Chicago could be dangerously in that territory. They hate when we trash Trubisky. So he needs to still take a step forward. But as far as the rest of the Bears roster, there's not a ton of holes, but let's find some good fits for them in that, you know, the middle round, second, third, fourth round range.
Yeah, where I would be looking is probably the secondary. Lost, you know, two players on the back end this offseason. I think someone like Amani Hooker out of Iowa would be perfect for them in terms of his versatility to play safety and also slot cornerback in that defense, would come in and replace Bryce Callahan. I think he could play that role right off the bat. I think to me, he could be there in the third for them. I'm not going to say he will be, but I think that's about where he'd be probably offering the most value. So I'd be looking for, if I'm the Bears, if I'm looking for immediate impact player, because I mean they're basically all in. You don't take two first rounders for Khalil Mack if you're not all in for these next couple seasons, where you're not going to have a first rounder unless you want, you know, a complete roster. So get a guy at a position of need that can make an impact right away. That could either be that cornerback position or just another pass rusher, because obviously in third down packages you can never use too many pass rushers. Leonard Floyd has not been great.
Hasn't been great.
It's an understatement. I mean, he's been one of the worst pass rushing edge defenders in the NFL over the course of his career. So just adding someone else to that third down package would make a ton of sense. We love some of the small school guys. Ronheen Bingham, Max Crosby, they'll definitely be there in the third, maybe even fourth.
We're talking pick 87 here. That's their first pick is 87. Those guys would be great fits, I think, at that point.
Right.
Because we're going to have
pure
like late
third down
seconds.
Guys at this point.
Max Crosby, Ronheen Bingham. Keep an eye on those guys. Potentially for the Bears, we like those guys as a fit. The New Orleans Saints, Should we get into what that trade did for them last year?
Yeah, give me what you were breaking down here.
Okay, so essentially, you know, I think smart teams have been saying this for years. Trade down, trade down, trade down. Every time you trade down, you have to have a trade up partner.
Yes.
The reason why you don't trade up, though, I'll use the Bills as an example. A couple years ago, they traded up to get Sammy Watkins when they could have just stayed where they were and gotten, say, Mike Evans, a comparable if not better player, and then the following year could have had a first round defensive end. Yep. So it's Mike Evans in a first round defensive end, which, you know, as an example, instead of Sammy Watkins. For the Saints in that scenario, they traded way up to go get Marcus Davenport. So now it's Marcus Davenport versus, let's just say, Jair Alexander.
Yeah, say they make the same trade that the Packers did.
Or Derwin James. Both guys were on the board. So they got Jair Alexander last year with their first rounder. Now this year, they have another first rounder.
Pairs across from Marshon Lattimore instead of a trash bag on the other side.
Yeah. They had to trade for Eli Apple this year. So they could have had Jair opposite Marshon Lattimore. They come into this draft with the number 30 overall pick, hypothetically, assuming Jair was just as impactful as Marcus Davenport last year. So who
Davenport legitimately was not very impactful.
He was not.
Alex Okafor, I think, outsnapped him, or they were splitting heavy playing time. He was not the starter there, full sail at defensive end.
So this year, hypothetically with 30, Cleveland Farrell could still be there. Zach Allen from Boston College. How different are these guys from Marcus Davenport? Cleveland Farrell, Zach Allen, Chase Winovich, Anthony Nelson. How different is he as a power edge defender than Marcus Davenport?
I'd probably take Davenport over in the same breath as, you know, Farrell or Winovich. He'd probably a step above Anthony Nelson to me. But at the same time, it's the incremental difference is not worth another first-round player.
Especially not when it could have been Jair, who's a good corner at the most valuable position on the defense, at a position of need as well for them.
And we said it, not to just keep trashing this pick wholesale, but we said it at the time, if you're going up to get a guy, that was not the guy that's going to make immediate impact on your defense. He was a raw prospect to begin with. He was a guy who was going to, if ever, be an impactful player. It was going to be year two, year three, year four, because he just had no pass rushing moves. I mean, he went to the Senior Bowl. He had one of the worst win rates at the Senior Bowl. Just when he went against real tackles, it was not happening for him. So if you're trading up, the guy should have been Derwin James. That's what I thought it was the whole time when they made that trade, because that was the guy that could impact that Saints defense. I mean, I would be hard-pressed to think that they would not have won that game against the Rams with Derwin James in that lineup.
Derwin would have been
that
great.
That was the guy, but like I said, two players versus two first-round type caliber players versus one. They obviously made it because they thought, you know, championship run, we have our window, Breeze, how much longer, we don't know. They're obviously all in, but it just... In retrospect,
well, I mean, Derwin James made way more of an impact in year one than almost any defensive player. He might have been the most impactful. So that would have been the most, you know, sorry, Saints fans. But
let's get to there. Yeah.
The risk of trading up is the whole 2-for-1 player thing. And that one player, the chances of that one player being twice as valuable as the other two is
unless it's a guy you're drafting in the top four. So it's really a crapshoot. They're just not guys that you can put a pin on drafted 15th overall and say he's going to be, you know, elite. Like, that just does not happen a lot of times. Usually those guys go top five and everyone knows it.
All right, let's look at 62, I believe they're picking. They're in the 60s.
Yes, 62.
So their second round pick. Any potential fits there? I'm looking at some corner, you know, Rock Ya-Sin, maybe from Temple. People are talking about him as a top 40 guy. Do you want to continue to load up at corner if you're the Saints?
Well, they obviously also need a center now with Max Unger as well. True. I think that could be Max Unger retiring. That could be where they end up going. Eric McCoy from Texas A&M. I think that's where he will end up.
That'd be a good plug and play.
In mid-second, late second. If Elgton Jenkins is there, I'd, you know, be running in my car with him because I think he's the most NFL-ready center. We'll get to that a little later, but I think more realistically, someone like Eric McCoy would be there in that range, and that's where they need someone right away. And Max Unger was not especially great last year. I mean, there was a reason why he retired. His play had slipped in recent seasons. I think Eric McCoy could legitimately even be an upgrade in terms of pass protection year one if they do. That's the route they choose to go.
All right, let's go to the Dallas Cowboys, and we'll circle back to the Browns. The Cowboys, another team, they traded their first-round pick for Amari Cooper. I think that was worth the risk at that point, you know, to get Amari, even though you have to pay him a lot more than you pay a first-round pick. Some good fits for the Cowboys. Can I give you mine?
Do it.
They're looking for Earl Thomas, right? They've been talking about Earl Thomas forever. Mm-hmm. They've got this beautifully homegrown secondary. Xavier Woods is back there. Byron Jones out at corner. Those other young corners.
Yep.
What if you had Darnell Savage to the mix and his burst and speed, a guy I think might be the best coverage safety in the class? I mean, I'm going him and Nasir Adderley, I think, are the guys that are going to be our top two safeties when it's all said and done, when we sort through this whole thing. And I just love what Savage brings to the table.
Yeah, he can cover more ground than probably any other safety in this class, and quicker, with as much speed as I've seen in any safety coming out in recent memory. He just explodes out of a standstill, play after play after play. Now, the worrisome thing is if you're, you know, throwing Knox's way, the thing that you are worried about is the fact that they just didn't put him in a single high role at Maryland. He was playing a lot of quarters, a lot of halves, a lot of, you know, in the box stuff, and he's great coming up and making plays. So you just don't see him taking those angles on the back end to, you know, throws, making plays, you know, whether it be from the middle of the field to the slot, that sort of thing, to the sideline. You see him coming up on ball carries, but I loved his angles coming up on ball carries. He attacks them, you know, in the flat at taking great angles. Now, he has a problem with missed tackles and throttling down and finishing, but his angle to it initially is what it pops out to me on tape and why I think he can translate to that middle of the field role at the next level.
It is eye-popping stuff watching him accelerate through the catch points at times. There's times where it's like, here's the receiver, here's Savage. He's a step behind, and then he just explodes past the receiver. And that's the type of stuff that shows up in the athleticism. 1.5, 10-yard split, which is exceptional. 4.36, 40, vertical jump, almost 40 inches, 3-cone, 7.03. All these numbers are really, really good. And again, I mean, it shows up on film. This guy is athletic, and it shows up when he is trying to find the football.
Yeah, and Cowboys one of the most cover three heavy schemes in the NFL. A lot of press on the outside, and he can just shrink the area that those boundary corners have to sort of guard down the field. I think that'd be invaluable to the defense.
I'd like him in that robber role.
Yeah, just anywhere in the middle of the field.
Short middle of the field. Mm-hmm. And compress the middle of the field because of how quickly he gets from point A to point B.
And then you think about the athleticism up the middle on the Cowboys defense. Jalen Smith, Leighton Vander Esch, and him. You have three elite athletes patrolling that middle of the field. That's where I'd be looking if I am Dallas Cowboys. No promise that he makes it there, but if he is.
Yeah, I was going to say, all that said, he's my pick as that safety that just ended up getting drafted in the first round. Mm-hmm. All right, the other team that doesn't have a first rounder is the Cleveland Browns. Traded it in the Odell Beckham trade, so they still have some needs at corner opposite Denzel Ward. Do they get another developmental offensive tackle in their, you know, offensive tackle room that's, you know, or offensive line room that's all developmental tackles and Greg Robinson? You know, maybe there's a couple different ways they can go here.
Yeah, and I think they could also add to the defensive line because while they added two more pieces in Olivier Vernon, Sheldon Richardson, it's still they had no depth to begin with. They were obviously shopping Emmanuel Ogba because he's not even good depth, to be honest. So four across, you don't want to run them into the dirt like you did a season ago. Get some depth, get a rotation going. So I think they could really go anywhere along the defensive line. And like you mentioned, corner, safety now maybe in need with Jabril Peppers getting traded. So any one of those routes I could see. So I think someone like Juan Thornhill could come in and step in for the role
good fit
that they
there.
Lost in Jabril Peppers. Very athletic, very explosive in the box. I think that could be where they're going. Like I said, anywhere along the defensive line, there's just basically add talent to that D-line.
I would look at Greg Little, the offensive tackle for Ole Miss, too. Mm-hmm. I think in that mid-second round range could be a good fit. A guy that
surprised he's not more. Getting more first-round sort of buzz.
I am, too, because he's, you know, traits guy, size and
length.
You know, former first-round ability and all that stuff.
And he held up pretty well in the SEC when you watch just basically his pass pro playlist of just because that Ole Miss offense can fool you into they'll have five straight RPOs where he's really not pass blocking. It says it's pass play. But if you really watch his pass sets, true pass sets, he didn't lose a ton there at Ole Miss.
He did not. So I think, you know, Little could be a good guy for the Browns in the second. Let's discuss a little bit more second and third round action. We've focused so much on the first. By the way, I presented this idea to you. I want to make sure that the listeners are cool with this. Yeah. Head-to-head mock on Monday. I'll get you back on here.
Head-to-head mock.
We'll just go back and forth.
Uh-huh.
Do I get the first pick?
Yes, you got the first pick.
So I'm on the clock. I get Arizona.
Because I know. You got Kyler. I don't want to get
Would you take penciled. Kyler? I wouldn't want you to screw up the draft with the wrong pick.
No, I'd take Kyler, too.
Okay. So I'm on the clock as of Monday. So I get Arizona. You have San Francisco. I've got the Jets.
Yes, and that Oakland.
You should have all the Oakland picks, though. That's how it should go.
Okay, we can finagle that when we get there.
Maybe. Well, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
But I think that'll be a fun little way. People love mock drafts. That'll be our mock draft for the week. So we'll do that Monday. We'll do head-to-head, make a little video out of it, put it on the pod. But first, second and third round picks, guys that you think are just great fits.
Yes.
Let's just go back and forth on a couple.
Okay, I have my first one off the bat here is Anthony Nelson. We touched on him a little earlier. The Iowa defensive end going to the Packers in the third round. Need someone to fill that role that they wanted Muhammad Wilkerson to fill, you know, the defensive end across from Mike Daniels. Get that three down front because they got the edge secured now. I think Anthony Nelson, what he can do, perfect five technique, perfect, you know, that sort of player, head up over an offensive tackle.
Is that where you would play him? I know he's a monster edge.
Yes. I think that's where his best reps came, is when he can get his hands into an offensive lineman early and then work from there. So Anthony Nelson, third round. I don't see a lot of early round hype on him. Didn't do too great at the Senior Bowl, but when I go back to the pass pro players, when he had real pass rushing reps, because a lot of times at Iowa it was run reads. He can't just attack the quarterback. So on those plays, he racked up over half his pressures on true drop back passes, not those play action, nothing where three-man rushes, that sort of thing. It was true drop back passes with four-man rushes. Over half his pressure came on that. So when he could really turn it up and go, he can attack the passer. So I think he can be just add some more talent to that Green Bay Packers defensive interior, where not a ton after Clark and Daniels.
We're going to have him in with a second-round grade, higher than I think most are, because of I don't think scouts love power rushers all that much. I don't think they love pure power guys in general.
I try not to guess too much what scouts love.
That's a good point.
I don't want to be clouded.
All right. So my perfect fit, or guy that I think would be a good fit for the Bills in the second round, Hakeem Butler, the wide receiver from Iowa State. Now, people seem to be all over the place on Hakeem Butler. Our friend Josh Norris thinks he's the best receiver in the class.
Yeah.
Poor man's DK?
I mean, it's a nice consolation prize if DK is not sitting there at nine for you.
Is he better than DK?
He's better at some things.
Would it surprise you if he was better than DK Metcalf?
A little bit. That would be a little surprised, yeah.
He doesn't have the pure athleticism.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
Straight line speed, I'll say, of DK Metcalf that's going to scare defensive backs. That's really DK's size and straight line speed just give him such an advantage that mitigates the fact that he moves like Tom Brady laterally. But Butler has the contested catch skills, got some freakish after the catch plays like some other guys in this class. But when you look at what the Bills did with John Brown as a deep threat, Cole Beasley as that slot, and then Hakeem Butler as the big guy that Josh Allen can just chuck inaccurate passes to, I mean, that's beautiful.
They need size in that receiving core. It's a little small at the moment. You need a little bit of just like catch radius. Obviously, don't go full Kelvin Benjamin and just select a glorified tight end.
Well, if you're going to get a big body contested catch guy, get one that's good at it.
Get one who has been elite at it over the course of his college career and has some physical tools to get open himself. So I think that's Hakeem Butler would be really a steal. I actually had a different name for the Bills in the second round, but just because I think I've penciled in DK Metcalf to them at nine, I think that's where he'll end up going if the Jaguars don't pick him. I think it's one of those two picks is where Metcalf goes. But I put Julian Love, cornerback, to go opposite
Tredavious
there. We've been mocking Byron Murphy to them in the first. I think second's more realistically where you'd attack corner because of offensive needs offensively. So I do think Julian Love, fantastic zone instinct. Some people want to put him as a slot cornerback. I mean, I think he can do that, but I think on the outside in a zone-heavy scheme like Buffalo runs, he would be fantastic. I love his instincts at the cornerback position. Not a fantastic athlete by any means, but so many plays on the ball this past season.
I told you I liked him in the slot role if you're playing that cover three scheme, like what Desmond King does for the Chargers. Yes. I think he could do that pretty well. Comes up and breaks on the ball very, very quickly, very efficiently. So I'm looking at the San Francisco 49ers and their offensive line. Garrett Bradbury is just like your perfect zone blocking center. Yes. So the Shanahan scheme, he's perfect. The McVay scheme. So I think he'd be great for the Rams, who do need a center at the back end of the first. But on the turn in the second round, the 49ers could look at a guy like him as well.
That would be a perfect fit. I mean, they have Weston Richburg. Has not worked out great. I mean, injuries have kind of derailed his career up to this point. So I don't hate it. I mean, there are other glaring needs on the 49ers, but I don't think you're close
enough. It's not the first place I'm going to go. I'm just saying as far as
the fit is perfect, yes, if that is the case. If he's sitting there, everyone seems to think he will go in the first round, Bradbury, at this point. So I'm not sure he will be there, but if he is, that would be – you'd have to take a second thought if you're John Lynch and by going need versus how good that guy fits into your system.
Yeah, for sure. Give me some.
I have another second rounder here. This one to me makes too much sense. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, new DC, Todd Bowles, Chauncey Gardner Johnson, the Florida safety / slot cornerback. That is a role Todd Bowles loves in his defense, is the defensive weapon, I think is the technical term for it. It's just a guy you could line up anywhere on the football field and he'll still produce. To me, that's Chauncey Gardner Johnson. Can play the slot, can play deep safety, can play in the box. I think he's a complete sort of player in that regard, and would his skill would be maximized in a role like that. And if you're just playing him as a pure slot, I don't think he's going to have nearly as much value. If you're playing as pure safety, nearly as much value as what he can do in that sort of role.
A lot of safeties like that with the versatility to play some slot, mm-hmm. strong, free safety, move around a little bit. The other fit that just made a ton of sense for me, the Indianapolis Colts in a zone-heavy scheme, Juwan Williams from Vanderbilt, who's just a monster corner, mm-hmm. doesn't have the greatest 40 time, but when you've got that cover two heavy scheme, you yeah. sacrifice some of the measurables for a guy that has that type of length. I like using the phrase that, like, compressed passing lanes quite yeah. a bit. He has that ability to do that, especially when you're playing him up in the flat, can beat up receivers a little bit with his physicality.
And he was still pretty raw in press. He had times where he just take guys completely out of the play, but he was still
and he got whooped other
iffy.
Times.
Yeah, he's still iffy in press, but his zone instincts were the most impressive. As you know, when you think bigger, longer corners, you think press man guys. He's no more of a zone sort of corner, and especially with that limited speed. So a scheme like Indy would fit that to a T.
A good fit. Who you got? Anyone else?
I have Elgton Jenkins, top interior offensive lineman on our board to the Broncos in round two. Haven't seen much first-round hype for him, but we love him. I think he's the most pro-ready interior offensive lineman in this class, which that fits with the Broncos' need. Obviously, they lost Matt Paradis to the Carolina Panthers. I think he's a just plus pass protector as well as a capable zone center. I think he would be perfect fit for what they do offensively and what they need, especially round two is where you start, you know, thinking interior offensive line.
All right, let me try one more here. The Bengals, everybody's mm-hmm. given them Devin White in the first round.
He might not make it there now.
Yeah, he might not make it. There's rumors that he's going top 10. Given the other holes that the Bengals have on the roster, would they have a guy like Blake Cashman from Minnesota available in the third round, number 72 overall? Mm-hmm. Cashman's not getting a ton of hype right now. We have him maybe as a second round type of grade. He's got the little T-Rex arms.
Does have the little T-Rex arms.
But he can move.
Yes.
And when we're talking Bengals and linebacker, it's about getting some athleticism, some range in the middle of the field. It's what they need. If you can secure that in the third round and still have some pretty quality first and second round picks, I think that would be a steal and a great fit for what they need.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you're not going to be the one making that pick, as you're not the DC for the Bengals.
I'm not.
But that's what I think that any athleticism. So I think, and you could go to the well multiple times there at linebacker. And if you do miss out on the Devin sweepstakes there in the first round, I think you can wait in this linebacker yeah. class. I think there will be good athletes. I think it's deep in terms of athletic linebackers. You can wait to round three, round four to get some guys with some coverage ability that will be upgrades for your team. Because, well, to be honest, it can't get much worse.
Yeah, the best, I'm looking at our horizontal board. We should probably print this out at some point, put it on the site and check it out. But it essentially shows the round value that we have in all these guys. And when you look at linebacker, we've got two guys that we expect to go, that should go in the first, a couple in the second. And then there's just a tight range of third to fifth rounders.
Yeah.
So that's where it's like, all right, if you miss out on the top two, wait, get that next chunk of guys because there's not a big difference. And I think that, you know, position scarcity is an important part when you're evaluating the draft.
Yeah, but I do really like Cashman. I mean, he ran a 4.5 something at the combine, a freak of nature athletically. It shows up on tape, too. It was one of our highest graded linebackers in the country. So a lot to like from him.
All right, do you have
besides
one more?
T-Rex arms.
Besides the T-Rex arms.
I have one more, and it's the New York Jets who they need a receiver, but number three overall might be a little high to be reaching for someone like DK Metcalf. So all the way down in the third round to their next pick, if they don't end up trading down in this draft, Riley Ridley, I think, will be there after his poor testing numbers. But he's a great route runner. And he has, in a class deep with bigger wide receivers, he is on the bigger end, but already sort of polished in route running. So I think he can come out the gate and produce. I don't really see much high-end upside potential in this game. I think he's, I don't want to say capped, but I think he's already who he's going to be. But that's an immediate impact guy. It's an immediate guy who that Sam Darnold can throw to next season instead of a lot of the guys that you're going to be picking in the third round who probably aren't going to be NFL ready.
The route running thing, like his brother Calvin, who went into the league last year, you don't need the shiftiness in and out of breaks if you're moving the corner the way you need to.
Yes.
And we saw Calvin do it with, you know, an inside release, move a guy so that you could break out. Outside mm-hmm. release so you could break in. The nuanced route running that the Ridleys have helps yeah. them a little bit with, you
it's
know,
like the,
to offset the testing.
It's like almost the Bosa's, where they are kind of similar.
Yeah, you don't want to
they're not exactly
call every brother yeah. the same. But
there is
the same,
is a trait
the
that they that
right.
they share.
If
I mean,
Bosa's
Riley's
same,
not near the athlete in terms of speed, but he has some of the same traits.
Great. Can we just freestyle a little bit? Just general draft talk?
Go for it.
Little freestyling here. We're putting the draft
don't
board together.
Don't freestyle rap, though. If that,
no.
That's where you're going with this.
No, okay, I would never.
Okay, good.
I would never try. That's not going to happen.
All right.
We're putting our draft board together. You're watching a ton of guys. I'm watching a ton of guys. Any general thoughts that you've run into this week? I mean, let me just start real quick. I thought the tight end class was going to be really deep. I don't really love it now, yes. the further I look at it. I think some guys are flawed. And if we do a my guys section, one of them is going to be a tight end. But I think it's a little Hawkinson. I like Noah Fant, the two Iowa guys. It's a little thin beyond that.
Yeah, I will not be the one drafting a tight end in the first round because of just it's not an impact position in a lot of offenses. I think it's a position where you can find later in the draft. So guys like TJ Hockenson, Noah Fant are rumored to be first rounders. I don't think either is a perfect surefire home run elite tight end.
Right.
You know, George Kittle coming out of Iowa. I don't think either of them are necessarily him just because they played for the same school. So I'd probably pass on a lot of these top tight ends.
I'm a little worried. So like Irv Smith. Mm-hmm. Got some great route running ability, some speed. He's just got H-back size. With these, it's part of the advantage of the tight end is that big catch radius and having a different body type than the receivers you have to throw to. He's closer to a receiver from a body type standpoint. Caleb Wilson from UCLA is pretty good after the catch, but more in a straight line manner. He's not a great route runner. Jay Sternberg is probably my guy at Texas A&M that I like as the number three tight end, and I don't think a ton of people are on him in that respect.
Yeah.
Any other anything you've discovered this week?
And I feel think trending? So. I think it's a very deep offensive tackle class, not a deep interior class. But there's a lot of guys I think that play tackle in college. This is the year of, you know, if you don't want to, if you do need interior offensive line help, I would be very willing to take a guy in the second, like Greg Little, Max Sharping, Yanni Kaju, someone, Bobby Evans, someone who's like that, who is not great at offensive tackle, but I think a lot of those guys can profile to the inside and be better than a lot of the big names in the interior offensive line of this class. I just don't think those guys on the interior are anything special, to be honest, in this class. There's only a handful of guys that take in the first or second round in this class in the interior, but there's a bunch of tackles who have flaws, but I think could translate inside. So that's my big takeaway is, be happy if your team drafts one of those tackles in the second or third rounds.
Some developmental tackles.
Yes.
Chuma Edoga, we mentioned as a sleeper, yes, on the last podcast, would be a good player. My last thing is the safety class as we try to sort through that. It still always comes down to fit and style. And all. We talked about Darnell Savage and his range. Taylor Rapp, more of a box, more of your just safe safety that's, yeah, not going to make any spectacular plays. There's a role for that, but it's tough. I don't think he's going to end up as our number one safety on the board. When you look at the high-end plays that Darnell Savage and maybe Nasir Adderley are capable of on the back end, you mentioned Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. Imani Hooker's a big fan. Yeah. We have a lot of fans, mm-hmm, of him in the building. Juan Thornhill, who you mentioned. And then Deontay Thompson, we can't figure out.
Yeah, I'm so down on him. I'm off him completely.
Oh, man. We had a new scouting term.
Oh. We revived that from the grave?
Yes.
What was it?
So I forget the actual words, but I remember it's VHS.
Must not have been great. VHS. Yeah. Okay.
Very. Oh man. Now I can't remember. Sam came up with it. So basically, that when you're watching, check his Twitter account.
Didn't go viral. That
essentially,
apparently,
what happens with Deontay Thompson? The second he can read the quarterback in a split second, mm-hmm, probably faster than any free safety in this class. But then it might take him forever to get there. He doesn't have the best speed.
Okay.
So Sam likes to say steals a yard in his brain. You know, in it with, yeah, his eyes. So he is just really, really fast at saying, okay, the quarterback is looking here, I'm breaking on the ball. But then there's there's another play where Isaac Nada, tight end from Georgia, who ran a 4.9,
outruns him,
is outrunning him in the SEC championship. Mm.
We'll see when Alabama Pro Day 2 happens, what we get.
So he might get the they already had their Pro Day, but he's got his own special one, like April 7th or whatever. Jarius Byrd is a guy that you brought up and I brought up when comparing him. Mm-hmm. They might have the best free safety, just pure instincts. Byrd was a pretty good athlete, but he couldn't really do much else. Tackling
wasn't
great.
No, he was like a 4.7 guy.
Okay, so he was just, that's right. He
and
was
then
slow.
After an injury, he was just like beyond too slow.
So I could see Thompson, if you just put him in this, you got that Schiano news? Is that what it is? Greg Schiano stepped down as defensive coordinator of the Patriots.
Oh, short-lived.
It felt like...
Let's have a moment of silence for the Schiano era.
Let's do that. All right, so it felt like an odd hire at the time. where Belichick takes just the most no-named next rocket scientist on his, you know, from Colorado School of Mines or whatever, and makes him the defensive coordinator. They've never hired somebody from outside the organization, so that felt odd.
It was weird, but worked out for everybody, apparently. Maybe not. Worked out for the Patriots, I'm guessing, because I don't... Shiano did not have the best track record in terms of translating on-field talent to good defenses at Ohio State.
I will say, though, immediately their QB kneel defense takes a hit. Because if there's one thing Shiano had was teaching guys how to stop
the
run.
Oh, and he had Michael Bennett, too. That was like the perfect confluence. Bennett would have killed someone to get to that ball. Oh, that would have been... Every game would have ended in a fight that they lost.
Talk about scheme fit. Michael Bennett in the QB kneel defense.
Yeah.
I just want to tell you guys about our friends over at Eckerich. The official smoked sausage of the college football playoff, Eckerich is the go-to solution for your favorite game day dish. Available in a variety of flavors and forms, Eckerich smoked sausage is versatile enough, much like all these safeties, to be paired with whatever you have on hand so you can create a meal that will satisfy everyone's appetites before focusing on the game. Pick up Eckerich smoked sausage from your local grocer's refrigerated section today. Eckerich will also be offering fans a chance to win, listen to this, Mike, $1 million, $1 million at some of the top college football matchups during the 2019 season. If you want to know more about that, it's eckeridgefootball.com for more information. That's an idea there, right? The Eckerich smoked sausage versatile safeties of the draft class. Mm. We're going to pitch that back to them, see if they want it.
Pitch?
You would.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to make sure they want that. So maybe you'll see that video coming up soon. We'll break up the versatile safeties and the versatility of Eckerich smoked sausage. Greg Schiano's out. Do you have any other general draft thoughts?
Nope.
That's it.
Back to you.
You said you were refreshed. I thought you had like a two-hour podcast in you after spring break.
I mean, that was a good one.
That was good. Covered a lot of ground there. Mm-hmm. Like these versatile safeties. All right, that'll do it. We'll be back Monday. We'll do head-to-head mock. First round only. Maybe we'll talk about some of the second round. We'll do more second round picks.
Yeah.
We're going to give the Cowboys fans love and the Saints and all that stuff. We'll give all those teams love. So we'll do that mock draft. We'll do two draft episodes next week. And, yeah, just keep up with everything on the YouTube channel and over at ProFootballFocus.com. Thanks, guys. See you next week. Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.